Chapter 4. South Africa. I arrived in Durban, South Africa, in May 1893. My objective was to win my case, earn some money, and perhaps finally start my career as a lawyer. After a few days, my boss took me to the Durban court. I wore a fashionable coat, new trousers, shiny shoes, and a turban. Why did I wear a turban? I wanted to look like a Muslim, because in South Africa, an Indian must look like a Muslim if he wants to have respect. Hindu Indians are seen almost as slaves. Again, I had a terrible experience in court. This time, I didn't even have an opportunity to talk. The first thing the judge said when I walked into the court was,
"Take off your turban."
"No, I will not," I answered immediately.
"Take off your turban or leave my courtroom," the judge insisted.
I left the courtroom. That night I wrote a letter of protest to the local newspaper. The paper described me as an unwelcome visitor. After that, I decided to wear an English hat because I didn't want more trouble. "No, you can't wear that either," explained my boss. "A hat on an Indian means you are a waiter." I was very confused. Things became even worse. Next, I went to the capital city of Pretoria. My boss bought first-class tickets for me on the train. As soon as I got on the train, I began to read and was feeling very comfortable. When the train arrived in Maritzburg later in the evening, a white man entered my compartment and saw me. He didn't say a word. He just left. After a few moments, two officials appeared. "You can't sit here," said one of the officials. "This is for whites only. You must move to another part of the train." "But my ticket is for this seat," I explained.
"That's not important. You must move," he repeated.
"I will not," I insisted. This seemed to be my favourite sentence in South Africa. The official called a policeman. He forced me to leave the train. I could return to the train and find a place in the third-class car, I thought, but I decided to stay in Maritzburg. It was terribly cold that night. My overcoat was in my luggage, but the station people had it. I didn't want to be insulted again, so I didn't ask for it. I sat in the dark waiting room of the Maritzburg station and thought about the situation. "So this is how Indians live in South Africa," I thought to myself. "I cannot live like this. Should I end my contract and return to India? Or should I accept these insults?" As I said before, I have always been quiet and shy. But suddenly, I refused to accept injustice. "I'm not prepared to kill for any cause," I decided. "But I will fight in any other way I can. I will explain my ideas. I will resist, but I will not become a victim of their prejudice. They cannot take away my self-respect if I do not give it to them." When I finally arrived in Pretoria, I went to a hotel, but I couldn't get a room. I was very angry. The Indians there laughed at me. "This country isn't for men like you," a rich Indian merchant explained to me. "If you want to make money, you must accept insults." A black American heard this conversation. He offered to take me to the small hotel of a white American man. It was called Johnston's Family Hotel. Mr. Johnston gave me a room, but since all his other guests were white, there was a problem. "Will you eat your dinner in your room?" he asked. "I don't want problems with the other guests." "I'm sorry, but that's how life is here." As I waited for my food, somebody knocked on my door. It was Mr. Johnston. I felt bad after I asked you to eat your dinner in your room, he explained, so I spoke to the other guests. They all agreed you can eat in the dining room, and you can stay here as long as you want to. Not everybody is prejudiced. Some whites feel uncomfortable about the situation, I thought after he left. I enjoyed the meal downstairs, but the next week I found a room in a private house, because it was cheaper than Mr. Johnston's hotel.